And what was so bad was I changed my Facebook name to Louise Hamilton, and then 2 months later I got a speeding ticket. Hi, I'm Anne-Marie Maffedon, and this is Women Tech Charge from the Evening Standard. Today, we've got a very fast guest.
I sat in this big economics lecture hall and I thought, what am I doing here? I want to be focused on my dream of being a racing driver.
Susie Wolf, MBE, is team principal at Venturine Racing and is a top racing driver.
Throughout my whole career, I was only ever not asked about my gender in one interview. We need to go into the schools and inspire young girls to believe that motorsport isn't just for boys. There's too few women entering.
Welcome to the podcast, Susie.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for coming. You arrived very sharply and promptly on time, which I feel like that's the theme for your life.
I like to be, yeah, fast. Where possible.
As a racing driver, I think is kind of the name of the game, isn't it, really? Speeds and times.
Completely, completely. And you end up being quite a perfectionist.
What's the best thing about being a racing driver?
For me, it's the adrenaline. You know, sitting on a grid waiting for a race to start. It's the feeling of speed. I love speed. I love competition. I love adrenaline. But being out on the track and just it's you in the car, you know, trying to go to the limit of what it's capable of. And yeah, that feeling is very hard to put into words. I'll never forget the first day I drove out of the pits at Silverstone in the Williams Formula One car. You're so focused. The concentration level when you're at 200, 220, 240 kilometres an hour, you're looking at every small detail. You're so hyper focused.
Be the car.
You're so focused.
I am the
speed.
Not even.
You're just in that moment, really.
Just in the moment.
Yeah, in the moment, and very much thinking about, okay, the next corner, where's my breaking point?
Okay.
How late can I brake, and where am I going to pick up time? And
the whole do or die kind of knife edge as well, the kind of the decisions that you're making.
I'd rather call it knife edge than do or die. That sounds a bit too extreme.
Some do call it extreme racing. So were you always, if we can rewind back before 8 years old, or even if we say kind of up to 11, was this always going to be something you ended up doing?
I think, you know, I was brought up with a great role model in my mother. Mm-hmm. You know, she was someone that had her own business, and she met my dad when she went to buy her first motorbike from his shop because her father was quite a famous motocross rider in the 50s.
Do you remember the first time you ever karted or drove?
Absolutely. You know, I was always, you know, on a motorbike, always a little girl that loved speed and didn't mind, you know, going through the fields fast on my little motorbike. And I was taken to the kart track, and I remember being out on track, and everyone was flying past me much quicker, and they were kind of bumping me as they were going past. And I'm thinking to myself,
hang on a second, they were bumping an 8 year old.
Oh yeah, it's fierce, you know.
Right, okay.
Out on track, you gotta hold your own. And
okay.
I came into the pits, and my dad always called me Toots. That was my nickname. And I said, Dad, I don't like it out there. That's not for me. He said, no worries, Toots. We've got two options. You can put the cart back in the truck and head home, or you go back out and you just try and go quicker. And when they're going to bump you, you're going to bump them back twice as hard. So I think you can guess which option I took.
Mm-hmm.
I went back out, and that was it for me, really. That was the moment where I embraced the challenge. I loved the speed. I loved the adrenaline. It wasn't an instant moment where I was incredibly talented and fast in
right.
That first, you know, it doesn't happen like that.
Yeah, that was 8 years old, exploring your passion, nurturing, putting the time in and the effort in. How did you decide that it was that rather than swimming?
At 12, my parents kind of said to me, you know, Toots, this is too much. We're all over the place with racing on the weekends, getting you up early for school. What do you want to focus on? What shall we do more of? And the other one we have to do less of. And I immediately said, well, it's karting. You know, that's what I love doing. Not with the view of becoming a racing driver. It's
right.
Just because that was the hobby.
You only had 24 hours in
I
the day.
I loved the most. Yep, and my parents never, they were never pushy parents. They were never dreaming that I would become a racing driver. It was a great family sport that kept us all together. And their view was sport, no matter which sport you choose, is great because you learn how to win. Mm. More importantly, you learn how to lose. Mm-hmm. You learn the importance of teamwork, of focus, of determination, and picking yourself up after failure.
You had the failures, but you had really big successes. So in 2001, you started in the Formula Renault UK Championship. You notched 3 podiums and you were twice nominated for British Young Driver of the Year Award. What were your motivations? What motivates you, or what motivated you to begin with to be that champion?
It all changed for me when I was taken to a Formula 3 race when I was 13. And Formula 3 is simply like a junior formula. It's where people learn their trade to get into Formula 1. So there's Formula 3, there's Formula 2, and then there's Formula 1.
Is there like an age kind of thing at Formula 3?
Yeah, Formula 3 would be from 18 to, let's say, 24.
Okay.
Maximum 24. It's getting younger and younger now.
Oh, really?
But at 13, I got taken to go and watch a Formula 3 race at Donington Park. And a driver called Jenson Button won the race that day. Went on to become a world champion. And that's when everything changed for me, because that's when I realized that you could actually become a racing driver and you could make it to Formula One.
This is Women Tech Charge. Subscribe and rate wherever you get your podcasts.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So I talk a lot about technology and engineering and women, obviously, and diversity and inclusion and all kinds
of different
people.
Which is fantastic.
The fact that what you build isn't as good if you've not been inclusive in the way that you've built it. So funnily enough, you have a Scottish accent. I don't know if anyone had noticed, maybe they weren't listening closely. And I always end up talking about voice recognition software and Siri, and the fact that Siri doesn't really understand Scottish accents, the thicker Scottish accents.
Just like my husband.
The other example I point to, which I kind of is still relevant, is seat belts and airbags, which till today aren't really built for the female form. So they were kind of designed around the 50th percentile man. Kind of famously, the story goes that kind of early ones killed women and children because they didn't quite fit properly on their bodies. And every time I get into a car, I still have this sense that it's not built for me. I'm using it incorrectly just because I'm not 50th percentile man. And it does make me wonder a little bit when we look at kind of F1 cars and racing and the rest of it. Is there something in terms of the nature of the cars that were built, because everything is so optimized to a particular archetype, a particular body type, a particular normal driver? Is there something, will there be a shift? Are we going to eventually have to also change elements of the technology, or at least the aerodynamic flow of what we're creating, if we're to allow physical space to have women at the, you know, in Formula One as more of a normal thing rather than as the exception?
It's a really good question. I work closely together with Mercedes-Benz, and we're involved in an initiative called She's Mercedes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And why I'm so passionate about it is that we're connecting with the female customer base.
Mm.
You know, they as a brand want to understand what mobility means to women, what we require from the cars that we're driving, what we expect from the cars we're driving. And you know, they've recognized the fact that 50% of the population is female. So that's 50% of the customer
base.
It's
a good time to notice that.
But it's an interesting statistic that women have an impact on 80% of car sales, because actually
purchasing decisions,
but also the discussion with either your boyfriend, husband, they have a big impact on car sales worldwide. So there is definitely, I think, from the automotive industry, a real willingness to say, okay, this isn't just these cars are not just built for men and we're not just listening to men. I think
it's about time.
The conversation is really opening up, and that's something that I'm very, you know, pleased to see and something I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
On the racing side, there will always be a limit to how much that's possible, because engineers are always going to be very determined to build the fastest racing car.
Right.
And that they won't compromise on that. For example, in Formula One, the drivers are digitally scanned. That will always, if a driver lineup is already confirmed for the following year,
yeah,
the car will be designed with the driver's form in mind. And there's a reason why there aren't many tall, heavy drivers.
Yeah.
The smaller you are and the lighter you are, that was where one of my advantages was.
Mm.
The smaller and the lighter you are, the more of an advantage you definitely have.
And, mm-hmm. So we should see more women in
theory,
one,
yes, then. Because there's such a funny instance a few years ago, because the new technical regulations had come in Formula One, and the driver weight had become quite a big issue for the engineers. So drivers were told to lose some weight or be a certain weight.
Or be a woman.
A woman, it would be easier. But I remember meeting Lewis after the winter break, and I said to him, yeah, and you had a nice winter. He said, it's been a nightmare. You know, I have to get to a certain weight, and I weigh myself every morning, and I think about my weight every lunchtime, dinner time. And I said, well, welcome to the life of a woman. You know, we're also under big pressure with our weight all the time. So it's nice that you see what it's like for a little period of time. But there are regulations in place that, for example, I had to carry ballast because I was too light.
And for anyone that doesn't know, what is a ballast?
Ballast is simply the weight you carry as a penalty to make sure you get to the weight.
But you can engineer it into anywhere within the car,
right? And that's the advantage you have. So if you're a lighter driver, the engineers can decide where they put the extra weight that they need to put in the car, so that it actually becomes an advantage on the engineering side.
So you have an initiative called Dare to be Different. Do you want to tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah, it's something that I'm very proud of. I founded it together with the governing body of UK Motorsport, Motorsport UK, and it was very much a call to action. It's when I decided to stop racing and hang up my helmet. I'm a big believer in giving back. I think it's important that in society we don't just take, we also give back. And I wanted to give back something to the sport that had given me so much. Throughout my whole career, I was only ever not asked about my gender in one interview.
Mm.
And I wanted to, you know, pass the baton on to the next generation, make sure I could pass on what I did right, my knowledge, and also the mistakes I made, to make sure they wouldn't make them themselves. And I wanted to create more role models out of the very successful women that I had worked with in the sport and knew that they could inspire others. They're not in front of the camera. So together we created Dare to be Different. We go into schools, we get young girls to racetracks.
It's really good. They go fast and it's fun going around the corners.
Brilliant. You can pretend you're in a racing car and beating everyone.
I feel like a sort of role play thing. I had to pretend to be Max, Nico and Lewis. And it's been a really, really good day.
Looking at wanting to become engineers, we connect them with successful engineers so that they can get advice and be mentored.
Mm-hmm.
And we create opportunity, whether that be getting young girls into a Formula One factory for a tour to inspire them, placements at either the leading motorsport magazine, Autosport, if their journalism is their thing, or getting them placements in teams.
What are the kind of lesser known roles that you imagine more people don't know about and probably should know about and could aspire to be?
We need, the real engineering side, which is performance engineering, where you need to have a background, not just in engineering from university, but a racing background, which means you need to have come through junior formula as an engineer to get that experience. You take a Formula One team, which has over 800 people building two racing cars, there's highly specialized roles, and getting in and understanding which area you want to specialize in and aim for.
That kind of fulfills you and makes you feel good, makes you feel part of that competition.
Is,
So if it's maybe too late for me, but I have a niece or I have a cousin or my little sister, if she's maybe sub 10, so 8 years old, what does that look like? How do we enable this generation?
So I think there's two elements, because in the end, if it doesn't just come down to age, even if you are slightly older but you have a passion for racing and want to go racing, the first bit of advice would be, if you want to be a racing driver, it would be simply go to your local kart track or go to your local indoor karting center and simply just start driving and racing.
And that's like go-karting, that kind of thing.
That's right, where okay. It all starts. The fundamentals, the basics are in karting. That's where you can learn so much.
Okay. And so you kart and then you enter competitions and it's that kind of thing.
Exactly.
So
and if you're competitive in the competitions, you can then enter national championships and then international championships, and you just kind of rise through the ranks.
So it's putting in the time, and then it's also, I guess, in some ways that sponsorship and that money and the funding as well, of being able to then approach teams when you've proved
yourself.
Yeah, I
think if you
want
to progress up through the ranks and with the aim of making it to being a professional racing driver, at some point you will need to find sponsorship and you will need to get the support network around you. But you need to get the foundation there first, and that's simply just going karting, and that doesn't need to be as expensive as some people perceive that it sometimes is talked about.
And you were studying, what did you study?
International business at Edinburgh University.
Oh, cool.
Many people presume that I would have studied engineering or aerodynamics or physics.
That would have been a good choice. Yeah,
yeah, it would have been, absolutely. And I actually didn't finish my degree, so I can't even...
No way.
You know, my poor mum didn't get her graduation picture on the wall.
But she's got your podium pictures. Surely, they are better.
I was kind of being, I don't want to say forced, because I think in the end it was a great experience for me. But everybody said, okay, because my grades were good, the expectation was that I need to go on and study.
Right.
And I'd done 1 year at Edinburgh University, and I remember it very clearly. I went back to start my second year, and I was combining my racing with studying, and I sat in this big economics lecture hall, and I thought, what am I doing here? You know, I'm just a sheep that's following the flock. I'm here because everyone tells me I should be here, but I don't want to be here. I want to be focused on my dream of being a racing driver.
And then I
walked out of the economics lecture.
What?
And I called home. Luckily, it was my dad that answered. And I said, okay, I want to leave university. And he said, okay, but I'll come and pick you up tomorrow morning. But then you've got to have a plan of what you're going to do.
So that was the Monday. Your dad came to pick you up on the Tuesday. And then how long did you have to kind of submit this plan to your parents?
Well, 1 week later, I had all my worldly possessions in a little Golf TDI, and I drove from Oban down to Silverstone. Bought the local paper, found a room and a house, and started working at Silverstone, which is for those.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's going to be a great montage in the movie of your life, that whole moment.
Let's see if my life's going to be interesting enough to make a movie
of. It already is. It already is. I'm sure someone listening here is ready to buy the rights to this. Time for a break. Send me a message using the hashtag Women Take Charge, and please subscribe and rate wherever you listen to podcasts. Formula E, this is your team principal at Ventura. It's a Formula E racing team.
It's only been running for 5 seasons, so it's a very young championship. It was one gentleman who had the vision and was very much a pioneer, Alejandro Agag, who said, okay, I'm going to create an all-electric racing championship.
Awesome
now, particularly with Dieselgate happening and everyone going electric. But at the time, a lot of people said, what? Are you crazy? That's not going to function. And I was one of those people, and I'm very open to him. You know, I was a cynic initially. But him and his team have done a great job of building Formula E up to being now one of the leading championships in the world. It's got 10 manufacturers competing, from BMW to Audi to Mercedes to Porsche. So really, the major worldwide automotive manufacturers are in Formula E. This idea of going racing in all electric cars is what will ultimately filter down onto the road cars that you and I will drive. It's exciting times. It's a big, big change within the automotive industry. It's very challenging for the automotive manufacturers to get it right and to make sure that the research and development is good enough that they're producing the right products for the markets.
It's almost as if you're starting again, right? Formula E is driving a lot of that innovation that we'll have in electric cars that isn't the same as what we've taken from F1 into kind of normal cars.
Completely. And that's, for me, what's so exciting about being involved in Formula E, not just the racing side, which is where my real passion lies in the competitive element, but also the fact that the technology that we are running at a very high level on the racetrack, it is going to filter down.
How close are you to the engineering on that side of things? So as a racing driver, as someone that comes up that was karting and was in the driving seat and maybe wasn't necessarily on the team or the engineering side, how close are you to the engineering, and how much of that is something that you are now leading or innovating on?
I was never the driver that wanted to take the car apart myself or my kart apart. Obviously, you need to have a very good understanding of the principles of how the racing car works or the kart, and you need to have the ability to have very good feedback to your engineers. And that can be a differentiating factor between a very good racing driver and an average racing driver. The feeling you have in the car and what's happening in the car, you need to be able to relate to your engineer. And that doesn't mean that you get really involved on the engineering side, because that's one step too far. You need to be able as a driver to say, okay, this is happening and this is what I need to go faster. It's the lap time on the racetrack, which a driver needs to manage, which is the ultimate goal.
Exactly.
It has to be the quickest lap time possible.
I did an interview with Lewis Hamilton, and he was saying that it's become a skill set of his, that he can communicate with the engineers. He's had to learn a little bit more about the engineering and what's going on behind the scenes.
I used to race against Lewis
when I was younger. Yeah.
But I've got a huge amount of respect for him, because he's someone that doesn't just have the talent, but also has an incredible work ethic.
So what are the new things that you're excited about engineering-wise, technology-wise, that you can share?
I think, I'm not sure, you know, there are coming things like artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. There's something called RoboRace, which is actually driverless race cars.
What? Doesn't that take all the fun out of it?
For me as an ex-racing driver, that's not the way I want the industry
to progress. Can you imagine?
Yeah, completely. But I think within Formula E, obviously how quickly the battery technology and the software technology is developing, it's something that's very exciting to be part of. Because in the end, for example, the new EQC from Mercedes-Benz, it's a futuristic looking car. It feels like you're in a different, let's say, car than what we perceive as a car. You know, it's quiet when you drive it. There's a lot more display. There's a lot more information to the driver within the car. So I think it's exciting to be at the cutting edge of that technology and see how quickly it's developing.
It's all moving. So it's not even necessarily you needing the new technology. It's the refinement of existing technologies.
Completely.
That we have,
and that's right? Where you need to make sure, for me as a team principal, that I have the best engineering and technical people that I can find in my team, because it's all down to the marginal gains. And particularly in Formula E, where it's so close and it's so competitive, it comes down to getting all the little details right and making sure that I have the best people in every position.
This is Women Tech Charge, I guess, so we should mention the fact that you're a woman. You in 2014 you were the first woman ever to take part in a Formula One race weekend in 22 years. What is it that's kind of causing that barrier, or is blocking women progressing from Formula 3, where they are, up into Formula 2 and Formula 1?
I would be really interested on your opinion, because obviously I think I see anyway that there's quite a lot of synergies between what we both do and the paths we've both taken. There's two little women entering the sport, whether it be on the engineering side, the racing side, or the mechanical side, the technical aspect. There's two few women entering for the best to rise to the top. So if you have 1,000 little boys dreaming of being the next Lewis Hamilton and you've only got 10 girls, there's a much
but there should at least
fewer
be
chance.
There should be more than one, because you're the one.
The scouting's not happening. There's just not enough female talent, because we're sitting at 7%. That's a very small number, and we need to increase that number for the most talented to then rise up through the ranks. But if a girl is talented enough, she will find her way through, and there's certainly a lot more opportunity than there was before. And we need to go into the schools and inspire young girls to believe that motorsport isn't just for boys. We're fighting the challenge that our sport is perceived as very male dominated.
Generalizations, they suck.
They do. They do. And I've come up against a lot of generalizations.
I still come up against that all the time. And it's got to the point now where I find it more funny than frustrating. People imagine me to basically be Sheldon and be the most socially awkward person ever and wear glasses and I don't know whatever else it is. So I turned up for my first day of work with a manager, and he was like, yeah, I wasn't expecting you to be like this. Or people that are like, oh, you speak so well.
Whenever I kind of get introduced to someone that I don't know, whenever they kind of hear that I'm a racing driver, they say, well, you don't look like a racing driver. I say, really? What should a racing driver look like? People couldn't tell if it was a girl or a boy in the car or the cart. They could just tell if the car was quick or not. And it was only at the end, if you took your helmet off, I could see the shocks sometimes of people saying, wow, that was actually a girl driving that car. But I think slowly but surely, I feel preconceptions are changing and people are much more open to individuals and people being different.
Thank you very much, Susie. I've learnt that I might not be able to become that racing driver in my lifetime as it's coming, but I'm ready and waiting to give birth to my daughter to help her do it.
You know, I think
live life right.
What you're doing is so good that you've got to stick to what you're doing because you're having such a positive effect. Dream of being a racing driver. Go karting if you fancy it, but please don't stop doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much for coming.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Tech Charge.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.